This episode is brought to you by Progressive, where drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. Plus, auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Quote now at progressive.com to see if you could save. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates, national average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
So why do you want to learn a new language?
I'll tell you why. Because ¿dónde está el baño? Can be a very important question at times. You know, Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. Fast track your language acquisition with immersive lessons designed to teach you to pick up languages in a natural way. I love the fact that I can go from my laptop to my phone to pretty much anywhere and learn the language of my choice. Not to mention, I'm bringing my communication skills to new heights. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a limited time, StarTalk Radio listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/starttalk. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/starttalk today.
Welcome to Star Talk, your place in the universe where science and pop culture collide. Star Talk begins right now. This is Star Talk. I'm your host, Neil deGrasse Tyson, your personal astrophysicist. And today we're going to feature an exclusive conversation with a fellow astrophysicist of mine. Well, I'll introduce him in just a moment, but let me get Chuck out of the way here. Chuck.
Hey, yes, no, get Chuck out
no,
of the
no,
way.
No, sorry.
How many times have I heard that in my life?
I didn't mean it that way. It yeah. just
Now
came.
I just feel like I'm at Thanksgiving dinner.
It just came out that way.
Nah, I got it.
Yeah, all right. So who we have with us today
yes,
is Hakeem Olusegun. I think I pronounced that right. Olusegun. Did I get that right, Hakeem?
Everywhere but in Nigeria.
Okay. That means I didn't get it right.
Well, because the name is a statement, they demand it be stated like a statement. Olusegun.
So then how... Olusegun.
Oh, you got to get in it. Okay, let me hear you say the whole name.
Hakeem Muwata Olusegun.
So you got to get in it.
Okay.
Olusegun.
Yeah, in Nigeria okay. only. They
right.
They let me know.
Okay.
In right.
All right, all right. I didn't know.
Like, yeah, they don't care in Wakanda. They don't care.
Wakanda, no. Yeah. Speak yeah, no English in Wakanda, apparently.
Right. Yes.
So you are a fellow astrophysicist, and I don't think we've met before. So that's actually a good sign. That means there are enough black people who do astrophysics that it's possible that two of them
you don't know each
might
other.
Have never met.
Well, okay. well, it turns out that very Uh-oh. Briefly in 2002 Uh-oh. At the American Uh-oh. Astronomical Society meeting, we did meet. I was standing wow. in an empty poster hall monitoring the SNAP posters, the Supernova Acceleration Probe, right? Which, you know,
okay.
came W-FIRST, which is now named after a brilliant woman. And so what happens is you walk up and I'm like, who is this black astrophysicist? I don't know. And I turned and looked around and saw your badge. And I had just, you know, I was looking at who are the other black astrophysicists in the world. And I just discovered you and I'm like, oh, Neil Tyson. And you're like, hi, how are you? I was fresh back from Silicon Valley. I kid you not. That was my first stop.
Okay.
Wow. All
right. Okay. So we did our yes. world lines. Did
so, okay. So okay. here's the thing. You met Neil. He just has never met you.
Yeah. That's right. That's right. Yeah. Yeah. Until now. Until now.
All right. Yeah. So we got
That's
this.
Hilarious.
Yeah, we got this.
So Hakeem, you came out with a book.
I did.
A book. Let me get the title straight here. A Quantum Life. Damn, you don't waste any time just putting it right out. Quantum Life. My unlikely journey from the street to the stars. Mm-hmm. We'll get to that in a minute, but I just want to get the rest of your resume out here. So we've got you as an affiliated professor at George Mason University. Is that right? Okay. And you
thank you, George Mason.
President-elect of the National Society of Black Physicists.
That's correct.
All right. And you used to be a space education lead at NASA.
Mm-hmm.
And a chief science officer at Discovery Communications.
Yes.
This is like not only Discovery Channel, but like 10 other channels that they control, probably other stuff too. Is that right?
Well, it mostly focused, those three focus on Science Channel, Discovery, and Animal Planet. We're sort of the science realm of Discovery Communications.
Gotcha. So if they got any science wrong, they send the letters to you. Is that what
Absolutely. Yes.
And but what intrigues me here is you're also an inventor.
Yes.
And you've got 11 patents.
Yes, sir.
Wow.
11 patents.
What's your favorite invention that you have made?
You know what? It's the one that I can brag and say it's in all your chips. And it's not because it's that amazing. It's just because
it's guacamole is in
my
chips.
I worked for them. Not those chips, computer chips. But, you know, I worked at a large Silicon Valley company that puts chips in all your computers. So if you develop a technology.
Right.
But basically, my work has made it more efficient and also helped with Moore's Law to keep progressing.
Oh, cool.
Okay. All right. So all right. So this is part of your, I mean, I'm calling you an astrophysicist, but as you list the rest of the stuff you've done, that gets us back to the subtitle of your book, My Unlikely Journey from the Street to the Stars.
Right.
Now, here's what I want to know. Is this book one of these, I was a poor black child? Is it one of those kind of stories?
You know,
is that what's happening
really?
Man, it is not. Because
it really isn't.
Yeah, it isn't. Because my story is so unique and it's so epic that the reason why I wrote the book in the first place.
Well, we'll decide whether it's epic. So don't you be putting that on your own stuff. We'll be the
That's
judge.
That's what they told me. Yeah, you know, I'm here discovering and everybody keeps telling me, oh man, you got to write a book. You got to write a book because my life story is so crazy. You know how you meet somebody and they throw out something. You're like, holy crap. What haven't you done? What haven't you been through? Right. That was my life. And so I thought.
And you actually obeyed them and decided to write this up. Okay. All right. So, if it's not,
it's a story worth telling.
It's a story worth telling.
It's a story worth. I got to tell you the truth. So I, you know, Lindsay sent me a copy of the book.
Lindsay, one of our producers, yes,
one of our producers,
senior producers, yeah.
Couple nights ago, and I only had time for that night to read it, that because I knew what my schedule was, and I got through about about 250, 275 pages of the book. And that's how good it was. I was reading it as homework because I just wanted to be prepared, but I ended up reading it for enjoyment, which is why I read 275 pages in one sitting.
Okay, now Lindsay didn't send me the book, so you should run the damn interview.
No, she
didn't.
Oh, no.
No.
I will fumble through this, and then, Chuck, you come in and make it better as I mess it up, okay?
No worries. Yeah.
So tell me, so where are you born?
That's right. So I lived in some, like, historic communities. I was born in New Orleans, and my home community is New Orleans East. My father is from rural Mississippi, so I spent half of my pre-18 life there, but also I have a foothold in South Central Los Angeles.
Man, okay.
Where he has a bunch of cousins who are actually Crips.
Yeah.
Or were they the
OGs?
Bloods?
No, they were Crips, OG Crips.
They
started
the Crips, yeah, they were OGs, yeah.
And, murders and went to prison for a couple of decades. And
these are the people you hung out with?
Absolutely. Yeah, man, I've hung out with everybody. Like, and that's the thing about the current life, the current moment, because in science, we have this sort of conflict. You know, on the one hand, if somebody makes a mistake, let's cancel them. But on the other hand, let's go into the prisons. Let's deal with the, the people that are incarcerated and help them up through education and science.
Right.
So, I believe in redemption. And because so many people in my life I've seen be redeemed.
Well, I'm going to push back on you, Hakeem, just a little bit. I don't think that your story was one of redemption.
No, not mine.
I think.
Not mine. Well, not him. Okay. He's talking about the other people.
The other people.
Okay.
I didn't even read the book, and I knew that, Chuck.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Well, listen, I never said I was smart just because I could read 275 pages in a night. Okay? It just means I can read.
They're little pages.
What you're saying is, not to put words in your mouth, but what you're saying is your environment and the people and the company you kept was quite an exposure, quite a baptism into the challenges of inner city life.
In a way.
And the life of poverty.
Absolutely. You know, look, everybody's ready to beat you up, including your own family. My family happened to have an entrepreneurial spirit.
Nice.
And very highly competitive. So I got into that life at the age of 9, very seriously. And it was something that I was drawn to. I was drawn.
But wait, that life, which life are you talking about?
I call it my dark side, right? It was a life
dark
of crime.
Side.
It was a life of crime.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah. Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Crime and lightsabers.
Yeah. At the same time, right? That's the whole thing about it. That's what's quantum about it, right? You have this state of superposition between these two phases.
Two quantum states. I get
it. And I'm existing in both of them simultaneously. Nerd and gangster, right? Gangster nerd.
Okay, but you're a black nerd, so that makes you a blurred. Just to be clear about that. All right, so tell us about how is it that you kept your compass direction throughout the crime, the violence, the muggings, because most people don't, and they're probably still in jail, prison.
Yeah, because I didn't want to stay that way, right? And for me, it was very simple. Tomorrow, I want to live indoors and eat, right? And so when I was finishing high school, I'm like, oh, what do I do? Oh, the military. So I joined the military. Then I get out of the military, and at that point, I'm aimless. And some friends convinced me to go to college. So now in college, you know, you have your dorm paid for by your financial plan, which for me, you know, one of the things people have been talking to me about all my life is this free education we get. That missed me somehow. So with my student loans, I was able to pay for my tuition, housing, food, but then college is coming to an end and I had no idea what to do. And luckily, a woman named Cynthia McIntyre, Claude Pooh, and Ayakut Box showed up on campus and said, hey, we have this thing we're starting called the National Conference of Black Physics Students. So let me tell you why. How you can become a physicist, which I really didn't see as my career. I became a physics major because physics is what was easy to me. And the reason why it was easy is because I fell in love with Albert Einstein when I was 10 years old and just studied it. But even before that, I fell in love with logic problems, right? And so I would solve all these logic problems. So even though I was like grossly undereducated by the time I graduated high school, I was passionate about the universe, and I had taught myself a lot of physics without knowing.
Okay, so you were incompletely educated. You still had passion for learning, which is a very important thing.
And I think you're being a little humble because you are clearly an autodidact and have been your entire life.
Whatever that means.
And
I don't even know what that means, Chuck. What is that? What is an autodidact? Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
No, it means that you're able to teach yourself.
Oh, right.
You are self-didactic.
Yeah.
You tell yourself.
So instead of saying he's self-taught, you call him an autodidact.
Yes.
He must be a biologist.
I don't know what the hell Chuck is.
No. but seriously, I think the other thing that is a bit underlooked, underappreciated, and I say this not just to you, but to everyone listening. What people see in you is the case. And you should, you know, people often look at you and see something, and because you are in your current situation, you can't see it.
Right.
And so throughout your life, according to your book, there were always people who were like, hey, man, you should.
Absolutely.
Hey, man. You should.
They see a spark of something in there.
Right. The reason why they do that is because they see it. And now look where you are. But they saw it and it was there.
But here's the thing. You didn't go quite far enough in the book.
That was... Okay, he became a serial murderer.
No, I did not, but that's what people saw. So I'll give you a funny a story from the book. So in 2013, I was at UC Berkeley doing summer research, and I ran into a graduate student friend, and he said, "Hakeem, remember that story you told me in grad school?" And I kind of forgotten about it. So basically what had happened is, because of my life of crime and the way I was living wrong, I dropped out of college. Okay. And I didn't want to live the life I was living anymore. And to be honest, I continued after this relapse and relapse type thing. So I got a job. And the only job I can get was as a janitor at a nearby hotel. I was making $4 an hour, getting something like 20 some odd bucks a week. I got a small apartment deep in the hood, and I don't even have enough money to eat. So the way I eat most days is I eat people's leftovers from room service. That's how I was eating. Then I get my big break, or so I think. And that is the bellhop at the hotel gets fired, right? And I'm thinking, yeah, I get $100 in tips in a day. But guess what? According to the hotel, I wasn't bellhop material, right? I wasn't front door material. And so my friend who I was speaking to in 2013, he said, "Hakeem, you know what? To me, that story encapsulates what it's like to be a Black man in America." Because they didn't realize that the guy standing in front of them was a Stanford PhD physicist. All they could see was the janitor.
Right. But that is because they were trying to hire a frickin' bellhop. So you also got to consider the source, you know? So I won't belabor the point, but I'm right, Hakeem.
No, as always.
All right, wait. There's way more to this story. We got to take a break. But Hakeem, I want to know what branch of the service you went to.
Yes.
How did you end up in Stanford?
Yes.
How did you end up even in college in the first place?
Right.
And so I don't want to jump ahead too fast because I'm still in South Central LA with you right here in my own head. So when we come back, more of Hakeem, and let me get his last name pronounced, Hakeem Olusei, and his story coming up from the depths of American poverty and crime to be a leading astrophysicist when Star Talk continues.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you, like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the US on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.
Whether you're a family vacation traveler, business tripper, or long weekend adventurer, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. And that's good, because there are a lot of me's. Choice Hotels has over 7,400 locations and 22 brands, including Comfort Hotels, Radisson Hotels, and Cambria Hotels. Get the best value for your money when you book with Choice Hotels. Cambria Hotels feature locally inspired hotel bars with specialty cocktails and downtown locations in the center of it all. Hey, that's me. Radisson Hotels have flexible workspaces to get the most of your business travel and on-site restaurants. That's me, too. And at Comfort Hotels, you'll enjoy free hot breakfast with fresh waffles, great pools for the entire family, and spacious rooms. Hey, that's me, too. I guess I'm just going to have to stay at all of them. Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Book direct at choicehotels.com, where travel comes true.
Hey, remember when we did that show about the science of the golf swing? Well, let's take that to the next level. And that's because PXG has developed the Black Ops driver so golfers don't have to sacrifice distance for forgiveness. And the science proves it. PXG Black Ops Driver is a breakthrough in driver technology. It's a complete and total victory in golf club engineering, unlike anything you've ever seen before. Black Ops Drivers are adjustable to deliver a combined MOI of 10,000 plus for unreal forgiveness. Now that's ridiculously high. The higher the MOI, the more forgiving the club will play. So you don't have to square the ball perfectly for it to go straight and get distance. Add PXG's new advanced material face technology, and you get incredible ball speed that pushes the distance to the absolute limits. More forgiveness, more distance, no sacrifices. PXG Black Ops Driver. Hit your tee shot straighter and farther. The proof is in the science. Learn more and get free shipping on all equipment. Go to pxg.com/startalk and use code STARTALK at checkout. That's pxg.com/startalk. Use code STARTALK for free shipping on all equipment. pxg.com/startalk, code STARTALK.
Hey, I'm Roy Hill Percival, and I support StarTalk on Patreon. Bringing the universe down to Earth, this is StarTalk with Neil deGrasse Tyson.
We're back with an exclusive interview with Hakeem Oluseyi, who is a fellow astrophysicist, my first time really officially meeting the guy. And apparently Chuck got a copy of the book before this interview because he wrote a memoir and Chuck read the book and I haven't even seen the book. So Chuck, I think I should just go to, you know, go have lunch now and you finish the interview.
No, because I'm hungry too. So.
Okay. So it's my A Quantum Life. My unlikely journey from the street to the stars, and quanta are sort of states of existence of particles. And if you apply that to your life, Hakeem, you told us in the first segment that you were this sort of street kid, but you were also this nerd, and the two generally don't have bridges between them. And when you don't, they're separate quantum states, but they coexist in the same body. Mm-hmm. So it's a superposition of these two quantum states, if we're going to run with the physics of it. But at what point did you say, maybe I'll go to the military? Was that to try to bring some order to your life and get a hot meal every day?
No, just like many other things, I had no direction. And someone came along and said, hey, how about you try this? So what happened is at our high school, now let me tell you about my high school. I grew up in Heidelberg High School in Jasper County, Mississippi, all black. A mile and a half down the road, Heidelberg Academy, all white, right? And so we were all told to go to the cafeteria.
Wait. It can't have just been a mile and a half down the road. There had to have been like railroad tracks or something, or
nothing,
freeway.
Nothing like that. No.
You could actually just walk from...
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
They made it especially cruel. They were like, we're not even going to put any railroad tracks
between
you.
You're not even across the tracks.
Right.
We're on the same damn road.
You're going to be able to look right down the street and see what you're missing.
Okay.
Yeah. And what was the question?
Sorry. So just how did you land in the armed services? And which branch was it?
Yeah, so I was in the U.S. Navy. So it was a very lucky thing for me. What happened was we were all ushered into the cafeteria and we were given the Armed Services Vocational Aptitude Battery exam. And I would kill all standardized exams, everything but the math. And so so what happened was a few weeks later, I get called to the principal's office, which was not an uncommon occurrence. But when I got there, he blew me away with what he said. He asked me, he said, what are you doing after high school? And I said, I'm going to go to college. And he goes, because I knew that's what you're supposed to do. And he said, how are you going to pay for it? And I said, well, I'm a good musician. I'm a good student. I'll get a scholarship. And he's like, let me introduce you to someone. He takes me into his inner office. And in there, in his dress whites, is Senior Chief Gage, the Navy recruiter. He stands up, looks me in the eye, puts out his hand and goes, hi, look, the most I can offer you is $20,000 a year. This is 1983. When he said that number, my mother's voice went off in my head because I remember her bragging about my brother-in-law earning $15,000 one year. And this guy just offered me 20?
Was that $20,000 a year after you get out for you then to spend on college? Is that
money is? This is full-time Navy career, right? So I joined the Navy thinking that was going to be my career forever.
They were going to put him in the nuclear program. Yep. He was going to go nuke.
Yeah. Passed the nuke test. But then my recruiter was like, dude, you're so amazing. You know what? I think I can get you in the academy. But he had never done the process, so it was too late. But he did find this program designed to take enlisted people and convert them to officers. But it was people from backgrounds that were undereducated. So they gave you a year of education. And they had two math classes, the regular math class and the remedial math class. Now, we have a Facebook group for all of us that were in this Boost 85, 86 class. They think it's hilarious that they were in a regular class and the astrophysicist to be was in a remedial class, right? But in that remedial class, we were taken from arithmetic through calculus in 1 year. Before arriving, I never heard the word calculus in my life. Luckily, I didn't get kicked out until I completed the algebra portion.
Okay, so just to recap, so this standardized exam you took, you did really well on all parts except the math part. And you did so poorly on the math part, but so well on the other part that they said they brought you in the back office, but then they put you in the remedial math class. Did I get that right?
It's similar-ish to that. You had to take a placement exam, and that's what landed me in the remedial class.
I got it. Okay. All right. Mm-hmm. So then you became a fast study and you pick it up and then you go to the Navy. Yep. And what do they do with you in the Navy?
Oh, man. So I start off in a nuclear program and then I transfer to this program called Boost, and it's run by the Marines. And man, do Marines kick your butt? So my discipline level. So, you know, growing up.
Just to remind people, the Marines are actually a branch of the Navy, in case anybody needed to remember that.
Oh, really?
But also, there are two kinds of nukes. There's the nuclear submarines, which is just an energy source, and then the nuclear weapons. So which of those were you
nuclear assigned submarines. To? And yes. Submarine, and in fact, I had befriended a former nuclear submarine captain, and I would sit around with him talking about his he's retired and became an instructor at Boost. And I would, you know, just love to hear his war story. So I thought I was going to be the captain of my sub someday.
Wow. So but then you couldn't serve because you had a skin condition and you can't be.
Yeah.
Is that the deal?
Absolutely. So you know how it is. If you don't have health insurance, you don't go to the doctor. So I had this horrible skin condition my entire life, and I got diagnosed for it properly for the first time in the Navy. And they were like, oh, sorry, you can't be in the Navy with this because it impacts your readiness. It really was horrific, I must say. And I didn't get proper treatment until almost a decade later when I was in graduate school.
Wait. So this is like some kind of psoriasis or something?
It's atopic dermatitis. It's an incredibly severe case of atopic dermatitis. Like, if you've seen me in my youth, I'd scratched so much. I was hairless and I was several shades darker for breaking all the melanocytes or whatever they're called in my skin. It was a mess, man. And I was in pain 100% of the time. Of course, my torso. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So that's all right. Damn. You know, you should write a book. Okay, so wait. So over all this time, you're reading Einstein and other physics, and the Bible's in there too. So how did the Bible show up in your life?
Yeah. Well, listen, I was in church every Sunday. You know, wherever we live, we moved every year and several times every year, right? Several times in some years. And everywhere we went, my mother didn't care what the denomination was. We're always in the Black community for the most part, and you were going to church. And, you know, being a little scholarly dude, you know how it is. I became voracious with books. So when I was in Mississippi, my brother-in-law let me know that, dude, you're not sitting around while everybody else 8 years and older going to work. At 12 years old, you're going out there, you're hauling pulpwood in those woods with my father and brothers. And if you don't know what hauling pulpwood is, you don't want to know. It is crazy. Hard work. And for a child, you know, it's criminal damn near. But a few days out there, my skin erupts head to toe, right? And so I'm left at home every day and I'm searching for reading material. And there's the big children's version of the King James Bible and the regular version. So I just spent day after day sitting there and I devoured the Bible from cover to cover. And the next year I was the adult Sunday school teacher.
Okay. Teaching adults.
So I started off with the kids and then I moved up to teaching the adults because, you know, I had so much insight at that point. And, you know, you know how it is when you're you have.
But it's one thing to have read the Bible.
Yeah.
It's one thing to have read the Bible and know what's in it. It's another thing to have digested it so that you can now teach lessons to people in Bible school. Yeah. That's a whole other level, right?
Yeah, it is. But it does. It happens automatically. Right? You start making connections and you start, and for me, I don't know about you.
No, it doesn't happen automatically. It happened automatically for you.
Okay.
I mean, just think about it. I mean, by the way, it's not unique to the Bible. Just because you got an A in your physics class doesn't mean the next day you can start teaching that very same class.
True.
Because teaching it requires some deeper insights that enable you to communicate what you just learned. And it's not just a recitation of a fact that just came off the page. So,
That's right.
So, all right. So, yeah, stop trying to think everyone is as smart as you.
Humans are dope. Humans are dope. I'm a human. You're a human. Chuck's a human. We're dope.
Not
Chuck.
The jury's still out. Jury's still out.
Jury, I was with you until you said Chuck.
No. Yeah. We're not sure yet. but I do think Neil is right in this, that people who are in your position feel as though, oh, well, everybody does this and it's not really the case, you know? And it's funny because I had a teacher who, that was how he taught us. He would say, all right, so you think you got it? And when you said yes, he would say, now teach it to me.
Right.
And that's how you got your grade.
Here's the thing, though. Were you interested in that? How did you think when you were interested in things? Because the thing about
then
me was,
it would come to you easier. It would come easier.
Absolutely. And I was surrounded by people, like my good friend, Chris Morgan, right? He finished high school. He's been working a job ever since. Didn't even consider going to college, right? And in fact, we were chatting and I was like, what are you doing after high school? He was like, nothing. I thought, okay, you're supposed to go to college or the military, right? But look, that dude was brilliant. He was kicking my ass. We would play games. You know, Chris was dragging me. And I was surrounded by brilliant people, even now. And one of the worst things that happens, you go home and you want to hear the wisdom of your homies, but because you got some fancy degree, they're like, oh, I can't talk to you, man. And I'm like, no, man, I need the wisdom that's in your head too, right?
Right. There's wisdom in all walks of life.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You had some good friends, because when I go home and I see my friends, I'm like, I don't want to hear nothing that you got to say. I've known you my whole life. You're a dumbass if I ever met one.
Well, you know, I do. But listen now, when I start talking science, I had this one friend, he'd always go, there he go with that stuff again. Like, they didn't want to hear that. They didn't want to hear the science.
Right. Yeah. Right. Well, so what's this about daydreaming and why that was dangerous? Did you daydreamed a lot as a kid?
I still do, man. I just daydreamed up 4 big bangs last week.
What do you mean by 4 big bangs?
Because we think of it as one big bang, right? So to us physicists, you know, we know that, you know, matter and all this stuff is an illusion, and we live in this universe of fields. So imagine you got something like swimming pool of jello, right? And you have several of them. One's green, one's blue, one's red, one's yellow. And you just merge them together in one. Right? So that's like all these fields merge together. So we have the inflaton field goes from this high energy to low energy, boom, gives all this money to the space field. That's the first bang. Space expands rapidly as a result. Boom, second bang. But that rapid explosion of space causes it to fill with matter and energy suddenly. Pow, right? But it's equal amounts of matter and antimatter, which annihilate. Boom, fourth bang.
Okay, Chuck, he's still on drugs, apparently.
That's four bangs. Come on now. They happen like that.
All the authorities now.
So it's four. The fermion field, right? It sends its energy into the electromagnetic field. It's like energy goes from inflaton field to space field to fermion field to electromagnetic field. And then what has happened? Right. Space stretches it out, right?
Okay, so is this something you daydreamed recently or when you...
Last week. I may have been. I don't know.
What was the transition between physics and astrophysics when you finally, you know, when you find sense finally descended upon you and you realized the universe is cooler than anything else?
Yeah. So the thing about the universe, I've been attracted to it from day one. I've been attracted to nature, but I was also attracted to weirdness. Right. So I learned, you know, my friend told me that, hey, you know, if you're under 18, you can't be held to a contract. So I used to order those Time Life books you know, Yeti, the Bigfoot, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I got into comics. My Mississippi cousins introduced me to Marvel and DC Comics, and I loved it. So when I hit Einstein and Relativity, I'm like, this is just like that stuff, like the miracles in the Bible, sci-fi, all that stuff, but it's real.
Except it's real.
Yeah, exactly. It's real. And then I was like, I got to learn this. So I started teaching myself Relativity at the age of 10, and I just struggled with it. And I didn't realize that how well I knew it until I won first place in physics in the Mississippi State Science Fair, right? These professors started coming at me and, you know, I didn't know anything else about physics, but I knew that. And so in college, what ends up happening is I take my first physics class, realize this has to be my major. And then I get accepted miraculously, though strategically, at Stanford for graduate school. And when I talk to all the professors, they have one African-American professor. I wanted to do experimental astrophysics. Astrophysics, I felt, was where the natural world met weirdness. And whoof, let's do it.
Yeah, that's true. I gotta agree with that. So where did you go to college before Stanford?
Tougaloo College. Yeah.
Tougaloo in Mississippi.
In Mississippi. Yeah. That's right.
Okay.
That was their motto, Boogaloo or Tougaloo.
Is that right?
No.
No, I just made that up.
All right, we got to take another break. But when we come back, I want to understand, Hakeem, what this obsession you had growing up with compulsively counting things and a little more about your very unlikely quantum life on Star Talk.
Do you want to set up your child for success? Of course you do. Maybe you want to save money on private tutoring, or maybe it's just out of your budget altogether. Is this a big school year for your child? Like maybe they're starting kindergarten, middle school, or high school, or some other milestone. Maybe your family moved and they're starting at a new school. Is your child ahead? Not getting challenged enough in class? Well, we love that little smarty, but we want them to be engaged. IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids covering math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed to help them really understand and master topics in a fun way. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid, no matter the age or the personality. There's one site for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. Kids can use it at home on the computer or on the go through the app on your phone or your tablet. No more grading those worksheets. IXL grades everything itself. And no more trying to figure out how to explain math equations or grammar rules yourself. IXL has built-in explanation videos. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And Star Talk Radio listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/StarTalk. Visit IXL.com/StarTalk to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Hey everyone, it's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for less. And for a limited time, new customers receive their second month free when they sign up and use promo code MONTHFREE by May 31st. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Taxes, fees, and other third-party charges will apply. See website for additional details.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Time to shout out our Patreon patrons, Emily Rivera, Jocelyn Salias, and Nicholas Early. Guys, how would we do this show without you? Well, the truth is, we wouldn't do it as well. And for those of you listening who would like your very own Patreon shout out, please go to patreon.com/StarTalkRadio and support us.
We're back. Star Talk. I got Chuck Nice with me, Chuck.
Hey.
Reading Chuck Nice comic. And I got my our special exclusive guest for this interview, Hakeem Olusei. And Hakeem, you're on social media?
I am. Yes, I am.
And so what do we call you? How do we find you on Twitter?
If you put Hakeem Olusei in Twitter, that is my handle there.
And no one else has that Twitter name.
It wasn't betting.
Yes. O-L-U-S-E-Y-I. Again, there's a Facebook page as well, I presume?
There is. I'm not there as much. I suck in that way.
TikTok or?
No, but I do have Instagram. And I have my first Instagram. Initial, middle initial, H-M Olusei.
H.M. Olusei. Yes. Okay. All right. Thanks for that that info. So we learned from your profile that you counted things as a child.
And I still do.
Obsessively, compulsively.
And I still do.
And is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Well, I went to see a psychologist because I thought it was a problem because my eyes divert to count things in the room around me, right? And so if you're doing business negotiations, you should be looking the person in the eye.
Right. Are you counting like objects or any kind of objects
patterns.
In the same category?
Patterns. Like behind you, there is a picture frame. I like particular numbers like 10s and 20s. So every frame is an easy 20. So my mind would do it over and over as I'm talking to you, just like I have been doing the entire time we have been talking. So each inner corner is 2, 4. The outer corners are 6, 8. The inner and...
Wait. Pay attention to me.
What? I'm showing you 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14, 16, 18, 20. Just do it over and over and over and over and over. I just can't stop it. I don't know what's going on. Okay. Yeah.
All right. That's a little weird. That's
oh, you want to hear weird. Even weirder? When I go up and down stairs, not only do I have to count them, I have to count them in such a way that when I go down them, my left foot lands at the bottom and lands on the number 1. And when I go up them, my right foot must land at the top and land on the number 100. Which means I have to guess what number and what foot to start on at the beginning of the stairs. And you...
So, and you'd be counting by 5s or 7s or 10s?
No, I mean, no, just by ones. But no, I am no, so good at it.
But you... Yeah. Wait. Your stairs, you might not have 100 steps. So
yeah,
how's this work?
No, 10
below,
stairs.
Below 20, I'm nailing it. If it's 10 stairs, I got it. Boom. It's just, I don't know what it is about my mind, but it's like... Bloop, bloop, bloop.
Oh, it's up to 100 is how you would be engaging this.
For example, if I see 17 stairs or whatever, I have to start on my right foot on number 84 at the bottom and then go 85, 86, 7, 8, 8, 8. So when I get to the top, my foot lands on 100. Yeah. And I'm so good at it. It's nuts.
Okay. See, we have that in common. I have to land on a prime number, which is why I always take the elevator.
Okay, so Hakeem, do I even dare share this with you? So when I was a kid, I thought of all the numbers that were just living in my head, and I decided to write down every single number that had any meaning or significance to me at one sitting.
Are you done yet?
No, at the time. Just at the
time. Yeah, but forever, still, that could take you forever.
But so I wrote down every zip code that had any meaning to me. I wrote down every phone number, 7-digit phone number that had any meaning, every street address, every the digits of pi. I also happen to know the 5th root of 100 to 12 decimal places. That's down there.
Oh, my God.
And so it's a whole page just filled with numbers.
But I didn't
view that as compulsive. It was just... How many numbers am I carrying with me? And is that necessary?
Right.
I think it was more of a practical exercise.
Yeah.
And then I stepped back and looked at it. And I said, I think that's a lot of numbers. But I tried to make sure it didn't grow so that I had room for other things in my brain. But this number thing, there's some resonance there between us.
Yeah,
I just thought I'd put that out.
You know, there's even more. I also had other kind of superpowers like you named that I no longer have. Like rotary phones. I used to... just amazed my family because I was like, you dial this number. Because I could just tell from the sound of the phone, right? Or if a car pulled up in the yard and it was a family member, that's so-and-so just from the sound of the car, right? So the people around me were like, oh, this kid is a freaking, and you know.
He has voodoo.
Absolutely. And because my eyes are a weird color, when I moved to Mississippi, there were several elderly people that was like, that boy have devil eyes. He's evil. And they just treated me like crap. Yeah.
What a shame.
Okay.
So let me ask you both this. It's so weird. Speaking of your childhood.
Yeah.
All right. So like in your book, you have these moments where you look to the stars and it has a profound effect on you where it causes you to go outside of yourself. you know? And I know Neil, when he was a kid, had the same experiences.
Yeah, in the planetarium, I was 9 years old, and the lights right. dimmed, the stars came out, and that's it. I was starstruck ever since. And I'd go out into the real sky when I finally saw a real sky, because I grew up in New York City, and I'd look up at the stars, and I just placed them in the full three-dimensionality of the universe. And for my whole life, to this day, anytime I'm alone out under the stars, but I have to be alone. If I'm alone, I want to be abducted by aliens. I want a beam of light to come down and zap me back to some other planet, and I want to meet the aliens.
I'm with you on that.
You should have told me that. I would have made a call.
You got me.
Is there something now, with all of your experience, exposure, and knowledge of the universe, is there something now that gives you that same experience?
Yes.
In your work, or in your admiration of the universe, or anything that puts you in that same wonder of, I see the night sky in 3D. Oh my God.
Out of body kind of experience.
Out of body kind of like this is why I'm here. Like,
well, you know,
is there something that happens?
Sometimes you have these insights, right? That aren't really insights, but just like, oh, that's really interesting. So for me, data doesn't. And so the data that did that for me a year ago was a visualization created from Sloan Digital Sky Survey data done by Lawrence Berkeley Laboratory. So we say things like, oh, there's 2 million or 2 trillion galaxies in the observable universe. And we show these slices of the universe. But when you see a 3D representation, you can look around the universe, you see what the galaxies are.
Just to be clear, when you project the full 3D universe on paper, you take slices through it. These are the slices you're referring to. When you go to a full visual 3D representation, no longer are slices necessary.
Absolutely.
I just want to clarify that. Go on.
Now, is that the baryon oscillating stereo
cockpit spectrum? Well, no,
survey?
No, this is before that. So BOSS.
This is before
this
that.
Is the,
okay.
You know,
this is the precursor to that.
Basically, in a way, yes.
Okay.
Sloan Digital Sky Survey. But so here's what I thought about.
But this is not your imagination.
No, it is.
It's actually in 3D.
It's actually in 3D, but it triggered my imagination. Yeah. Because what do we do when we teach students astronomy? In order for them to understand the universe, we say, well, you know, things like this, analogies. The universe is the basic building block. The galaxy is the basic building block of the universe in much the same way that the cell is the basic building block of your body. And I thought to myself, well, you know what? Let me take that to the limit. Let me take that seriously. So what if I shrank myself down so small that the size of a human cell in respect to me is like the size of a galaxy with respect to me now, right? So that's like 20 orders of magnitude for the nerds out there. So I did that. Now I was like, what if I then study the universe from that perspective? So say I'm in an elephant and I'm like, oh, I see these types of galaxies. They're spirals. They behave this way. They're structured this way. Oh, I see these. They're ellipticals. They behave this way. They orient themselves this way. Now let me do the same thing in my analogy. I'm in an elephant. Oh, I see a nerve cell. These things behave this way. They distribute this way. Blood cells, bone cells, muscle cells. Do you have any freaking idea what an elephant is?
Okay, so what you're saying is
interesting.
Okay, so you are who's the woman who drives the bus that can go any size and shape?
The magic school bus.
You're on the magic school bus
at all times. Journey. At all times. At all times. Yeah.
Wow, that's pretty wild, though, man. That's a great analogy. I love it.
Yeah. It's a change of perspective.
And let me give you
another
change of perspective, right? Because us scientists, we always like to talk about like how everything's just all space. Like, oh, you know, how long does it take a light ray? You know that visualization on the internet where in real time we're going to travel from the sun at the speed of light.
The travel of the beam of light. Yeah. It's brilliant.
Brilliant.
Completely brilliant.
Right.
I love it.
Visualization. Right. I tweeted it. Anybody's wondering. So someone shows the actual beam of a video of a beam of light moving from Earth to the moon, and it takes about 1.5 seconds. So you see it take 1.5 seconds.
Yeah.
Then you see a beam of light go from the sun to the Earth that takes 8 minutes and 20 seconds. So you wait there for the 8 minutes and 20 seconds.
Yeah,
so and watch, you say, damn, that light is slow.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So what was I talking about?
Yeah. So in your PhD, you quote Ibn al-Haytham.
Yes.
We spent a bit of time on him in Cosmos.
Is that right?
So why don't you remind everybody who he is?
He is, I consider him the first practitioner of the scientific method. He's the guy who showed that the eye is a passive receptor. It does not send out a beam and bounce back. And when Isaac Newton, your favorite scientist I've heard, said,
"My boy,
if I have seen farther than others, it's because I've stood on the shoulders of giants." Ibn al-Haytham was one of the people he was speaking of, because his Book of Optics as a scientific treatise in history at around the turn of the century 1000 just changed everything.
Right, so this is in the golden age of Islam.
That's right.
Back between like 800 and 1100 AD. So there's a quote here, which is it's got it all in it. Will you allow me to read it?
Please, sir. Your permission? Please. You know everyone loves to hear your voice.
Okay, so just a reminder, Ibn al-Haytham was a mathematician and astronomer and basically credited with the first formulation of the scientific method, which would take probably another 600 years to become widespread use, but he landed there first. And if learning the truth is the scientist's goal, then he must make himself an enemy of all that he reads. He should also suspect himself so that he may avoid falling into either prejudice or leniency. Wow. There, in two sentences, is the fundamental seeds of the scientific method.
Scientific method.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. There you go.
Statement about Ptolemy is amazing as well. For a man to imagine an arrangement in the heavens does not make it exist.
Okay. No, that's good.
I like the first one better.
Good. We got like a couple minutes left here. So tell me, you were born James Plummer Jr.
That's right.
And now you pulled the African card.
Yeah.
So where did that come from and why?
You know what? So the first thing, the seeds of it started when I read my very first novel, which happened to be the book Roots. Everybody was talking about
Roots.
It. I didn't have any love for adult books at the age of 9, right? And so I'm sitting around the farm, bored as I don't know what. And I'm like, let me give this thing a read. And I got stuck. I mean, I could not put it down. But when he got captured, that was the first thing that just got me in the heart.
When Kunta Kinte got captured, right?
Then the second one was the Middle Passage.
And you've been Star Trek Next Generation fan ever since.
Right? I was thinking of him. I didn't know whether or not I should say so.
Okay. No. Yeah. Remind us who played Kunta Kinte.
LeVar Burton. Who, when I met him, was one of the very few times I've ever been starstruck. And he bought me my very first vodka tonic. So...
Wow. Okay.
Wow.
All right. So keep going. So now you're in Roots now. So now what?
Yeah. So then the thing that just kills me, man, is when they force him to change his name, right? And so that just planted a seed in my mind, right? And so as I'm developing, believe it or not, this really isn't in the book. But so what happens is, you know how you make these connections? By the time I'm out of the Navy and I'm in college, I start making these connections about the society in which we live and all the way it works against, you know, the way it maintains the hierarchy, the socioeconomic hierarchy we have, right? The identity hierarchy.
Yeah, implicitly and explicitly and legally and de facto and de jure, there's a hierarchy.
So you know how you sit around your dorm room listening to music and other things? So I would start talking about this stuff. And the group of people grew and grew and grew till we had to take it to the dorm. And everybody's like, "Oh, you're a prophet." And then these cats from the Nation of Islam showed up. And I was like, "This is over. I am not doing this anymore. It's gotten too serious." But, you know, I was just like making all these connections, you know, of what's going on. But did that answer your question?
Just to remind people, the Nation of Islam is the branch of Islam that is based in the United States of America.
That's right. It's not really
a more description of that I have to give?
Well, it's not really a branch of standard Islam. It's sort of a new religion that was founded by Elijah Muhammad, where he combined
Islam.
Coincident with
Malcolm X, right. Okay.
Yeah, yeah, right. Yeah.
So go on. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So when I get to Stanford, right, I feel like there are certain things I need to know. And the first.
This is Stanford, a graduate school in physics.
Graduate school in physics, right. Yeah. So I'd had this buddy because I was, you know, what they called Afrocentric at the time, who always was encouraging me to read certain literature. And I never would. When I got to Stanford, I was like, "Blackness, help, where are you?" And I found it in the library. And so I started devouring. And I had certain questions in my head. For one thing, I wanted to know the political structure. I wanted you to be able to tell me a year, and I'll tell you who the major nations in the world were at that time and what was happening in Africa at that time. I wanted to understand African religions. I wanted to understand everything, right? And so historically, I'm a huge history buff, all the way back to the Big Bang. And so what happened is I realized, you know, okay, I'm doing well in school. stuff like this matters. I feel like I've become a new person. I've let go of the old guy. You know, I'm now the man. And I was reborn in a way. So I said, here's what I want. I want my middle name to express who I am. I want my first name to express who I am, who I wish to become. And I want my last name to honor my African ancestors. And the reason, that's why I identified with, right? And so my middle name, Muata, is Swahili, and it means he seeks the truth. My first name, Hakim, most people know it from the Muslim connotation, but actually it's all over the Near East and Africa. And it always means the same thing, some form of wise. And my last name, Olusheyi, means God has done this. I want it, it's Yoruba. Because on my mother's side of the family, we have family gatherings. They were proud of always saying, we were not slaves, we were not slaves. And frankly, until the actual research was done and put in my face in the 90s, I never believed that. I was like, then how the hell did we get here then? We're black, right? but it was true. And so my ancestors, this
it was the black settlers. It was the black settlers that came across the Bering Strait.
No, they went from Europe.
The lost tribe of the Bering Strait.
Well, you know, I did read, you know, if you read Roger, what's his name? Roger A. Somebody who's like, everybody in history was black. This guy was black. That guy was black, right? Beethoven's black. So, what was I saying? So Olusheyi, he came from Yoruba land, went to France, went to Santo Domingo, had a son, my great-great-grandfather, and then moved to New Orleans, so this is my great-great-great-grandfather and my mother's great-great-grandfather. Right. Yeah, yeah. So Yoruba land.
This is an important rebirth.
Absolutely.
Here.
I thought you changed your name because when you went to Stanford and your book, none of the white people would help you with your projects. And you, after you had helped them, and so you like, you know what? I'm going to make these people as uncomfortable as possible. See, yeah, my name is Hakim now, okay?
No, it wasn't that. I did do that in my early years. I was in one of the few research groups that had a stereo in there. And they were known for that being so cool. They have a stereo in the student offices. Dude, one day I went on there. I put on Ice Cube, America's Most, followed by Ice Cube, Kill at Will, followed by Ice Cube, Death Certificate. But later, I learned that we are all individuals.
And then they sent it back to jail at that point.
But, you know, I learned that we're all individuals. So I don't even say white people, black people like that anymore because, you know, I'll tell people I'm lucky. I've been abused by white cops and black cops. I've been held at gunpoint by black thugs and white thugs. You know, I realize that, you know, there is a identity hierarchy in our country. Right. And one of the things that happens is you leave America and you have this sense of, whew, right? Because you don't feel it anymore. You don't feel that oppression anymore.
Right. It's a weight lifted. It's a fascinating phenomenon. It's,
yeah, exactly.
I don't have that. I don't have that problem. I look down on everything. So.
Well, you know what? So one of the psychological games I play, like if I'm driving across a part of the country where it's worse than others, is I pretend I'm in another country because then I don't know what your assumptions and thoughts are, right? I don't know what your mores are in your countries. So I'm free.
Yeah, but they'll let you know real fast.
You're absolutely right. Hey, I'll tell you a funny story like that. When I was in Berkeley.
You ain't from around here now. Yeah,
I'm from
boy.
These parts.
When I came back to astronomy, I was at UC Berkeley. And among the group of people I was in, we saw Perlmutter and those cats. And what they, you know, my blackness for the first time wasn't this issue. So I was sitting in a talk and I was like, oh my God, I forgot I was black. Right. And then
right.
I left that position and became a professor in Northern Alabama. And they were like, oh, no. You're black.
Wow. Yeah.
So, guys, we got to land this plane. Okay. So let me. So this was quite the journey. Mm-hmm. Like I said, you should write a book. Oh, you did write a book.
That's right. Yeah.
A Quantum Life, My Unlikely Journey from the Streets to the Stars. And it's published in the Random House group, right? Mm-hmm. Who is it? Penguin Random?
Yeah, it is. It's specific? On the Valentine imprint on Penguin Random House.
The Valentine imprint.
It's out this year.
Yeah. Yeah. So this sounds like a long overdue memoir based on all the stuff you were talking about. Now I wonder, you know, if all this is happening to you, this is just your memoir part one, because the rest of your life, that's got to be worth another memoir, I'm thinking.
Oh, it's absolutely. It's even crazier. I'm not abused for the first half of it. But, you know, it's because now I have agency. Now I'm the guy who can make a difference in other people's lives, right?
Yeah, so that'll be how all that got turned into something where you do some good for the rest of the world and for the frontier, the moving frontier of physics. Mm-hmm. So I'm liking it. Dude. Listen, thanks for being a guest on Star Talk. And will you invite us to the Hollywood premiere of the biopic on your life?
Yeah. Because you know they're going to make, they got to make this into a movie.
Oh, I guess you haven't heard. I guess you haven't heard. So
we have not.
So after I got the book deal, I went to Hollywood. I met with several production companies. My last meeting was with a man named Chadwick Boseman and his partner, Logan Coles. And he took this on, and he, when he passed away, he had 10 projects. And Logan told me that our project together was the only one where it wasn't resting on the fact that he was an actor in it. He was purely directing. And we met a week before he was giving the commencement address at Howard, and I was being awarded an honorary doctorate at Tougaloo. Right. And so we talked about this, and he championed my story, and Universal signed it on the first pitch. And we signed a movie deal 2 years ago.
Already.
Wow. Okay. Already. However, Chadwick's death has changed things.
Okay. Yeah. Well, don't worry, because it's a great story.
Somebody will pick it up. Yeah.
And somebody
will
pick it up.
This should not need Chadwick Boseman to get made. I'm pretty sure about that.
And just make sure Michael B. Jordan plays you, man, because then, you know, it's guaranteed success.
Well, there's a great similarity between my childhood abs and Michael's current abs.
I got six-pack abs, too. They're just under 4 inches of fat. But they're in, I promise you. All right, guys. So listen, thank you, Hakeem, for agreeing to this interview, and good luck with the book tour. And you got good backing behind that if Random House is in the equation. So hope to see you on the bestseller list. And I'm waiting for my ticket to the premiere. Chuck agreed that Michael Jordan's got to play you in this role. So that'll happen. All right. Chuck, always good to have you here.
Always a pleasure.
This has been Star Talk Radio, an exclusive interview with Hakeem Olusegun, who is a fellow astrophysicist, I'm meeting really here for the first time, and who has a remarkable life captured in his memoir, which comes out this June. Okay. So this has been Star Talk. I've been Neil deGrasse Tyson, your personal astrophysicist. As always, keep looking up.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.